91.3 KXCI Tucson. Real people, real radio. Hello, Tucson. Thanks for joining us today at 91.3 KXCI Tucson, where you find real people, real radio. This is Kathy Harris with my co-host, Aspen Green, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. You can hear more of our programs on our Broad Perspectives podcast page at kxci.org. And today, our esteemed guest is jazz vocalist Serenity Stewart of the band Serenity Brings the Storm. I'm looking forward to hearing more about Serenity and her music, so tell us more, Aspen.
Oh, I sure will. And as you said, Serenity Stewart is the powerhouse vocalist behind Serenity Brings the Storm, which is SBTS, a dynamic band that revives the best of classic rock and country while keeping the dance floor alive with R&B and funk favorites. A classically trained soprano turned jazz and standards artist, Serenity is known for her sultry voice, commanding stage presence, and fearless style. With a career spanning music, stage, and screen, she's a true entertainer who delivers every performance with glamour, gift, and heart. Thank you for that, and welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you. I'm so appreciative to be here.
I mean, when I first read your bio, I said, this woman's got to be from New York or Los Angeles. This doesn't sound like somebody who's from Phoenix.
So, you know, I'm not. People forget about Motown.
Oh, is that where you grew up?
Uh-huh. I grew up in Detroit in the suburbs, yeah.
Okay, I think Kathy can relate to that.
I'm from Detroit, the city of Detroit.
From Detroit.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have to ask you, how did you end up in Phoenix?
My father worked for Hal Earnhardt back in the 70s. So about 1973, our family relocated here from Michigan, from Royal Oak, Michigan. And he was here for a while, but found it was a difficult transition. It was just too much for him. And he wanted to go back. So my father went back first and reestablished himself in his former position. And then we all followed suit. I didn't quite go back exactly like I was supposed to because I was a teenager. So I went back from Phoenix to Seymour, Indiana, where I just happened to bump into John Mellencamp and his brother, Ted, who I was absolutely in complete love with at 17, you know. And I stayed there for a long minute. I was kind of groupying it and hanging out with Ted and John. And then my father sent my sister to come and get me. So then I went home.
Oh, okay. Well, before you ever stepped on stage, you were a single mom of four. I find this story very fascinating. And you were managing an OBGYN office in Phoenix, which doesn't sound like something I would have guessed you were doing, and singing mostly to your kids in your car. How would you describe that part of your life at that point? What was your life like then?
Complete and utter chaos, hopefully a controlled chaos, because that's who I am, very sort of not controlling to the point of like I need to control other people, but I am perfunctory and plan ahead. So my challenge was always to be prepared. Preparedness is always my key. So it was tough. I did two shows a day in the commute to work and on the commute home. And it was not the worst time of my life. It wasn't the best. It was just very, very busy. People ask me, today's world, how did you do that? I say, you know what? I was younger. I don't know. I just kept going. Maybe I had 3-4 hours to sleep because you came from work and then went home, decompressed for 30 minutes. And then I'd say, okay, single file, line up. Who's got the worst problem today? And it's one for all for one. Your brother has put a project on the back burner that's due tomorrow. And it's a relief map of Rome. So I'll be right back. I'm running to the store, getting supplies. We're all working it. And it was,
I really can relate. I mean, I felt like I lived in my passenger van. I had four kids and I went from gymnastics to soccer to music lessons to my van looked like my house. I had supplies in it. I'm surprised you even had 30 minutes to decompress.
Yeah, I insisted on it because I had to. You know, when you're working in a medical practice and you're the administrator, every patient's problem is the worst. It's in their mind and you get it, but it's just a constant whirlwind of problem solving and seeing people and being a part of their lives for that day period and then coming home and having to be a part of your own offspring's lives. It's, if I wanted to go where no woman had gone before, I would go in the back of that van and clean that thing or underneath my own sofa,
Well, so how old were you when you started singing, and when did music become part of your life?
No, I was about 9. I think when I was a little girl, my mom did play the piano and she was a classical pianist. So we would do sing-alongs. We were like the Norman Rockwell painting at that time. My father was Irish Scots and would play the spoons and he would sing because he was Irish. They all sing, overseas. Then in church one day, they were doing a hymn that I knew. So I'm singing that hymn and the whole congregation stops. And I'm thinking, oh God, strike me dead now. What is happening? I'm completely and utterly like just wanting to crawl into myself. And next thing you know, there's a social hour following the church sermon. And we went back, and the church choir director came over and kind of recruited me to go into the choir at that point. And my mom said, "You didn't do anything wrong. They just wanted to hear you sing." And I was like, "Oh,
That
Lord."
is not what happened to me. That's wonderful.
Oh, what happened to
I
you?
remember trying out for the choir, and I think the first five lines I did, they went, "Okay, thanks." So, we don't all have that talent, let's just say.
Oh, we have everyone brings something different to the table, but that doesn't make you
Exactly.
fabulous, right?
Right. Was the choir your musical training, basically? Or
No,
did
my mother hired a private music teacher at that point to give me additional vocal training. We had lots of training. I did ballet at the Borgo Sisters for years, like from the age of 3 until I was 14, I danced. Then I did the vocal training and I did that, oh, for all the years I was in from 9 to like 14, because about 14, 15, we did move from Detroit area to Phoenix. And then later in life, when I decided I was going to come back into the singing realm, I took lessons with Jeffrey Skousen out of Las Vegas. He was Seth Riggs' president at that time. And we all know Seth works with kind of everybody who's anybody in LA. So he happened to be in Las Vegas. And Jeffrey walked me through my first album, too, in the recording studio. I felt like I had been sent to heaven. I got to use Celine Dion's microphone.
Wow.
Yes, and recorded in the same studio she used. Yeah, I know. I was like, give me a moment. I need to get down and give thanks.
Yeah, that's
Was
really
a great experience, and I was so happy to have somebody to help me and walk me through that. But particularly at that time, I was working on a chest voice because when you're a soprano, they train you and they love you. They love sopranos, especially back in this day where I'm coming from as a young woman. I wanted to have a better range, more of a vocal range, so that I could get in deep in the chest voice, get through that mid range, and then get back up into the head voice.
All right. I never heard that term chest voice, but
Oh.
now I
Chest
understand.
voice is way down here. Yeah.
So I have read that you have a Broadway trained backbone. What does that mean? And have you ever done musical theater?
Ah, that's on my agenda, but I haven't done it. But I think what the reference is leaning toward is the fact that I have done theater and I have done some movie bits, and I think that translates into a stagecraft. So when you're singing, there's movement and facial expressions and hands and legs. You're using the entire stage sort of as your platform. And that's what makes it great for me. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I think there's a voicing to each song, some of them more so than others, depending on the message that you're bringing in the song. Like the lyrics are a story. And when my kids were little, I used to tell them stories and I'd do all the little voices and I'd be Papa Bear and I'd be Baby Bear and I'd be Mama Bear too. And so, you would do all these funky things and that kind of, for me, it's like a mimicry that's kind of fun. And I
Yeah.
enjoy.
So I was going to ask you how you got so passionate about theatrical storytelling, but maybe it started with your kids.
Started there and maybe a little earlier because I used to get smacked on the head with a ruler all the time by my first grade teacher for talking. I'm like, hey, I'm having a conversation over here. But she didn't like it, but she liked me because I won the poetry contest because I always read a lot of prose. And so I won the spelling bees too. So I think language as an art form has been inside of me for a very long time.
Okay. I also read that you're a 1940s enthusiast. In I am, but it's only in clothing. So,
Oh.
who are your influences?
Oh gosh, you know, I was in the basement as a child and I found a box down there of records, and they were my mother's 45s and some LPs as she moved into the 50s. But you know, I found like Till Then, the Mills Brothers, and I found Rosemary Clooney. And then later, she had a younger sister, much younger sister, her only sister, who had some things like Petula Clark and Johnny Mathis. So I spun those records regularly. There's one single picture of me as a child standing, and God knows who picked my outfit that day. I'm like, maybe I did. I might have been early in the fashion thing, you know, but I'm spinning records, and that was a pastime for me
Sure.
then, you know. It's different because I'm from a different era. I'm not like kids have digital stuff today, you know.
Absolutely. Oh, they're going back to vinyl. I
Yeah,
mean,
vinyl's still popular,
it
right?
is. It
Yeah.
is.
I collect clothing too, and so I think in that became a love of all those old clothing pieces that I collected in the
There's
40s.
nothing better than shoulder pads. I don't care what anybody
Right, no,
says.
right.
So it wasn't until 2005, after a life-threatening brain aneurysm nearly took your life, that everything changed. I was very surprised when I read that. Tell us about what happened and as much as you feel comfortable sharing.
Well, you know, I visited the tunnel like a lot of other people. I've gone through the dark tunnel, going towards the light, saw people there, saw myself down below. Basically, I was told I was an unfinished model and I needed to return, but I didn't really want to because it felt so wonderful. There's this light, beautiful sensation of like, ooh, I'm lifted up. And I had been there one other time. So I sort of reluctantly did come back. And it was a bit of an eye-opening experience, because one of the things you figure out at that time is that time itself is your most precious commodity. None of us really knows when and how or where we're going to go and depart this level of the game, so to speak. I always say there's another level. It's like Nintendo, you go from this level to the next. And I learned I was a type A personality because I thought I was, this was Saturday morning when I actually woke up and I have no blood. I have completely bled out. I asked the doctor, "Did you transfuse me?" He says, "No, I've seen people do this before, and you know, you'll build back your." It's fine. He's like, "Okay, so I'm going to work Monday." He's like, "No, princess, you're not. You have to lay down for a whole week." And I treated that like a jail sentence. I was like, "What? I'm like Miss ADHD. I cannot lay down for a whole week." But I found that the illness had created a space for me where I had no choice but to lay down. I felt like my head felt like a champagne cork about to pop. So my friends brought me food and wine, which I was like, "Hey, I need iron. Yeah, I'm gonna drink that because if I'm going soon, I'm having my last rites here, my communion." I had a younger sister who lived in Arizona who helped me get through that time. Two of the children stayed with their father, and the other two were a little older, so they were able to come and go and be kind of self-sufficient. So 1 week later, I returned to my regular job, regularly scheduled activities.
That's quite a story to go from an aneurysm to back to work in a week. You are quite resilient. I'd say you were very lucky. Like, there was definitely, like you said, you were not meant to go at that time. All right, let's get to your music so that we can
Oh.
play some really soon here. Your newest band, tell us about the band, how you got together, and who you're playing with.
We got together just kind of by accident. Sometimes the universe puts you in a place where you hadn't planned to go. I had done some guest vocals with a band that did classic rock and an Elvis impersonation type thing. And when I did that, they really enjoyed my vocals and they left that band. This is when COVID's beginning and we're into it a little bit. And they called and said, "Hey, we left that band, but we really love you. Can we work with you if we build a band around you? Will you do the vocals?" I said, "Well, at this time, there isn't a lot going on. Let's see what happens." So we all committed to building it from the drummer and the guitar that called me to a secondary guitar and a bass, and we had keys. My bass and my guitar player both lend vocals to backups, and I do have them doing a couple of songs, and I lend backup vocals for them. And we play classic rock, country, funk, and R&B, and we have a great time, and we're a great little work family. That's important that everyone
Sure.
feels connected and important, and everybody has input. That's
Yeah.
so important,
You know,
yeah.
I think it's easier to find musicians than it is to find a lead vocal singer. So they were certainly lucky to have you. And I've listened to your music, and now I want our audience to listen to your music. So, Kathy, what are we going to listen to?
Yes, I'm looking forward to playing this for our audience because she has such a delightful voice. The song that you have chosen for us to play, Serenity, is called Java Mama, and it's one that you wrote yourself. So would you like to tell us about it?
It's the first song I ever wrote. And I wrote it because my son was talking to me about he had been told he couldn't have caffeine, and he talked to me ceaselessly for 90 minutes about caffeine. So I went back to my car and wrote this song. And then I produced it, and the rest just became like, oh, geez, I can write songs.
Well, this is a great song. It makes me want to have a cup of coffee right now. So we're going to listen to Java Mama by Serenity Stewart.
Thank you.
Mama, gotta get my go juice every day. I think about it, dream about it, cafe au lait. A 40 weight keeps me from being late. How about you? A cup of Joe espresso, cappuccino, all good types of brew. A cafe noir. Kiss and you. This Java Mama loves a brew. I think about it, dream about it. Hot stuff, old Joe. I need it, got to have it, don't you know? A Prairie Mama, Macchiato, Iceberg, Kamakaho, a jerk. Give me Buna. Get me cava, wrap my frat, please do. A cafe noir, a kiss and you. This Java Mama loves a brew. I think about it, dream about it, hot stuff, old Joe. I need it, got to have it.
KXCI Tucson. That is such a delightful song, and your voice is so wonderful in it. You're listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, and we're returning to our interview with jazz vocalist and many other genres, also Serenity Stewart.
Yeah, that was a great song. You know, there's this place in Tucson that has this cabaret, an upstairs cabaret, and I just pictured you singing in there.
Yeah,
So,
love to.
yeah, sometime we'll have to get you down to Tucson. Did you play with other bands before this band, or were you always singing solo?
No, I do solo digital shows, and I had one created for me that I did in North Scottsdale. I did a run of Golden Age of Jazz and Legendary Ladies. But I played for, oh my gosh, a dozen years with Kenny Thames, who is the musical director at the Paradise Valley Country Club. And we did keys and sax and bass and drums, and we did a ton of jazz and standards. It was a big thing for us. And we played together a lot. So between that and digital solo shows, it kept me busy enough. I still have children, and grandchildren and all that kind of thing going on behind all those scenes. So it keeps you very active.
Yeah, the children don't go away just because they get older. They have
No.
children and then there's more. I also thought of the Century Room. We'll have to think about the Century Room where we have a
Oh,
lot of
that's
jazz
I've
down
read
here.
about that place.
Yeah. So you as you mentioned, you're also a writer. I'd like to find a little bit more about how your writing career started. Were you writing songs? And then I think you're also writing books.
Well, I have penned a bit of a book. It's not quite ready yet, but yeah, I think the writing started out as a cathartic mechanism to get thoughts into paper. And because I like poetry and prose so much, it was really fun to do the capsulized, compressed version of that story or that thought and make it more prose-like. So then it became, well, I'm going to use this. This is really a good lyric for a song, and then add music to it. So there are times where I go into a live band situation for music, and times where I went to University of Central Oklahoma because I got a clavinova. When I heard Elton John had one, I'm like, I must have one.
Okay,
But
explain what a clavinova is.
it's a digital Yamaha piano where you can build your own 12 tracks in the piano and send it to your USB and then plug it in at the studio and add your vocals.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's a wonderful device, but it was technologically advanced. So for 2 summers, I went to University of Central Oklahoma to work with the teacher that Yamaha had working out of there. And I worked with the vocal instructor there who also taught Kristen Chenoweth, and she was part of that gig. So it was like a fabulous event. So I
She's
was there.
Broadway.
Oh yeah. Kristen's fab.
Yeah. So are you touring? And tell us about some upcoming shows that you have.
We are not touring. I don't know if this band is desirous to tour. They probably would prefer to do the corporate groups, functions, fundraisers where we plan ahead. Because the age group we're in, everybody has pleasure travel, everybody has grandchildren, everybody has things that they want to schedule in and around. And with corporate groups and events, you're scheduling far out. We also have a venue that is just getting its certificate of occupancy in Northern Arizona. And I happen to have met the gentleman who's building it through some USO shows I did locally during the COVID period. And he took me over there to show it to me. He said, "Now, is this big enough for you, honey?" I said, "Well, are we going to be here?" He said, "Yeah, I want you to be like the house band for the events.
Wow.
And I'm going to get you the sound system you want and this and this and that." And this, I said, "Well, how many square feet is it?" He said, 5,000. I said, "Oh, that's fine. That should be
That
perfect.
should be big enough.
That should be fine." I joke, but I mean, he is a beautiful, wonderful individual. And I'm not at liberty to mention that venue until they get that certificate. But we look forward to that. We think that's going to be a wonderful home base for us to work from.
What is your favorite kind of venue to perform at? Do you like the big places or do you like the
No,
intimate
I like the
places?
intimacy of the smaller rooms because you really, there's a different vibe and there's a different sense of your audience because you get more closeness with them. There, you're talking and able to have communications that you can't in a big arena space or a bigger room.
Yeah, and as an
That can
audience
be a lovely
member,
thing.
I think that it's a better experience in a smaller place too, because you really get to feel like you kind
You're
of
part of,
connected. You're part of the show.
yeah, that's what makes
Absolutely.
the show the show. You're interacting with people in the audience. You know, one of the things I do is when I'm setting up stage, I always think, what are we singing? What do our sets look like? I have like a rack of lighted tambourines, like 50, 75 tambourines. When I'm going to do Green Tambourine or some song that, you know, I have the whoever comes up first, they all want one or mostly two. They want to play with the toys and dance, they want to be a part of the show, what's happening. And I love that. I think it's great.
Is great. You could tell you're a mom.
Oh, come, children, come.
Yes,
Yes.
please, let me teach you. So tell us your philosophy of looking your best. I also read about that. Why is it
Oh,
important to you?
well, you got to wear your brand, whatever that is. If it's crazy, wear your crazy. But I think wearing your brand is partly fashion and it's partly making a statement without saying a word. It also helps you because it elevates you into that space where, hey, I'm Serenity and I present Serenity. But Serenity wears a lot of hats, as all women do too.
True.
So you look your best for that day and what's on your agenda that day. But I feel like it's helpful to me personally when I work in the boardroom. You'll see me in a double-breasted jacket. Now, I may have a bustier on underneath there for fun later on. I may be going out, but I'm dressing, power dressing for that moment in that meeting. I just feel like it's a branding thing more than anything. And confidence. I think that's what you should wear every day under your clothes is
You
confidence.
know, one of my biggest criticisms is when people aren't on stage and they dress like they just got off the softball court, you know, and
No.
I'm like, come on, I want to see an
That's
outfit.
oh my gosh, when I do my 90-minute legendary ladies and golden age of jazz, I used to change my costumes some and people would scream, like they literally scream because they would love it. But isn't that just part of the intensity for you and for them
The
dressing?
difference between a performer and somebody who's just playing music. So I
Oh, there
think.
you go. Thank you.
So before we go, because we're kind of running out of time here, I want to know where our audience can find your music. How can they get a
Oh, on
hold of you?
iTunes, on Reverb Nation, on Number One Music, on all of the streamings, Spotify, Rhapsody, every streaming mechanism, there is Serenity Stewart.
Okay, fantastic. Serenity Stewart. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. Gosh, I can't wait. I'm going to go up to Phoenix and hear you play as soon as I
Thank
can.
you. I'll look forward to it. I'm so blessed to have been a guest. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And I will go with you, Aspen, but
Please.
unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for today. But Serenity Stewart, thanks so much for being with us today to talk about your life and your music, which is delightful. And thanks to all of you out there for joining us today. This is Kathy Harris with Aspen Green, and you've been listening to Broad Perspectives Radio. You can hear more of our programs on our podcast page at kxci.org. We're going to go out with the song Girls Night Out, sung by Serenity Stewart. And after that, stay tuned for Boom Goddess Radio with Jennifer Davis Page. Have a great Sunday, and we'll see you next week.
Friday night, been a long week. Between the job and home, I'm feeling a bit antique. Gonna dress up and lipstick down, down the heels and hit up town. Well, it's girls' night out. We're gonna paint the town. We're gonna bust out some moves and throw a few down. Oh yes, it's girls' night out. It'll be a lot of fun. Just the Carrie Bradshaw. And who's the other one? Tell the guys not to worry. There's no need to hurry. It's been a long week coming. This is a tactical warning. We won't be back till morning. Oh, it's girls' night out. We're gonna paint the town. We're gonna bust out some moves and throw a few down. Oh, yes, it's girls' night out. It'll be a lot of fun. Just like Carrie Bradshaw. And who's the other one? Searching for just the right pub may end up in a karaoke club. We'll form a new garage band, be back next week by popular demand. I love her.